access number 30,002, Mr. Eric Harrison, Reel 9. Now, can I talk to you about the successes that you brought? Did your Sunderland ever sight or contact submarines in any of these? Because we haven't actually mentioned that yet. I mean, we mentioned the one when you were in the Whitney, but... Do you have any contacts?
Well, we had contacts. We had radar contacts at night time, but not during the day. But at night time, we picked up the odd contact, and by the time we manoeuvred into position, the U-boats had dived. But, you know, as I said earlier on, that was part of the plan.
So you were part of the team,
of
Sunderland, carrying out the mission to see. Anything else you remember about these last couple of months with them? Any particular missions? There's some bad weather.
Yeah. Well, we used to have to divert for bad weather. I've diverted to Plymouth in my time and Lockern.
What was it like being in Sunderland in really bad weather?
Well, we used to have to fly at about 1,000 to 1,500 feet, and that was where it was its bumpiest, of course. Was one of the reasons for my air sickness, but generally speaking, people you'll never come across anybody, I don't think, that will say that they didn't like the Sunderland for this, that, or the other. Generally speaking, it was a wonderful aircraft. It was invented by the same person that invented the Spitfire, which takes some believing, but it's true.
Now, you also stopped flying with Parkinson, started flying with everybody again. If Parkinson finished his tour, you started flying with Hewitt and Lombard and Hewitt and Smith, Boone, quite a few people.
Because eventually Hewitt took us over. He was on his second tour. He was a flight lieutenant, and he was already a double DFC. He'd sunk a couple of U-boats.
What was his first name?
Dudley.
And what was he like?
Awful.
Now, in what way? you called me because I wasn't quite expecting it.
Yeah.
What was awful about him?
Well, I used to say that he'd kill us. And he flew... He flew a Sunderland as if he was flying a Spitfire. Tight turns and things like that. I mean, you've got to remember that the Sunderland was the, before the war, it was an Empire flying boat, and it was high class and expensive, and the pilots were all sturdy and flew according to the book. This guy didn't. I used to say that he would kill us, and in fact he did. When I went on rest, can I tell you this?
Well, you finished on the 11th of May 1944, don't you?
Yeah.
Then
I went to a crew officer school in Hereford.
Right, so what about the last mission? Is that where Hewitt does something, or is it Hewitt later? The visit back and nearly killing him.
Yeah, well, when I finished my flying, the wing commander sent for me and said that I was due to go on rest. And I said, thank you very much, where am I going? He said, well, you're going to the Air Corps Officer School, but you don't have to go. He said, the balloon's going up. He said, it's going to happen. What we've worked for all this time is going to be put to fruition any day now. Well, the invasion was the 6th of June. And I left towards the end of May. He said, I can't tell you to stay with the squadron because we need you. He said, you can tell me you want to stay with the squadron, and this posting you've got now will be cancelled. You'll stay with us. And I said, but I want to go on rest, sir. He said, well, the balloon's going up. And it did go up. And I was at Hereford at the Air Corps Officer School at the time when the message was passed to me. Somebody rang up and on the 10th of June, in connection with the invasion, because the jobs that the flying boats got was to cover the Straits of Dover, because all these boats were going across with troops and from day one of the invasion, the Sunderland flying boats were flying around there, and we don't know what happened to my crew, but they were either shot down by fighters, or they'd seen a U-boat and were attacking it in a U-boat, and they were all killed, every one of them. And you know, that was a couple of weeks after I left them. And all those chaps who were my friends and I'd flown with for all that time, they were just lost.
That must have upset you a lot.
It did. I remember it in detail to this very day.
Now, you finished your tour, and you've gone as you have the right to. You've gone to number 4 operational training unit, Olness. Is that right?
It was Olness. Yes, yes. That was where they trained Sunderland navigators, and I went as an instructor.
As a navigation instructor.
Yeah.
Now, how did you find that job? You're an officer now.
Well, I was very lucky, really, because that is where my pilot, who had gone on rest before me, George Parkinson, was teaching the pilots. And he asked for me, and so I was his navigator. He asked for me to fly with him, and so we did a few trips together.
Because you're flying officer by now.
Yeah.
That must have been nice to be able to get back.
Yeah, it was lovely. Lovely, yeah.
And what exactly was the role of the navigator? What does a navigation instructor do?
All that would happen was that crew would... A crew would be briefed as to where they had to go on exercise. We used to go... The big exercise was Rockall. You've probably heard of Rockall, which is just a stone island off the Hebrides, and we've claimed the right for it. It's of no importance now, but it was during the war, and they could have put a beacon on it and things like that. And we have to go and fly across Scotland and pick up Rockall. That was a good exercise. We also used to do a patrol in the North Sea, looking for U-boats.
A training patrol,
yeah, but it was on operations, really. My job was to just keep an eye on the navigator and see that what he did was okay, was correct, and assess him, because he was it was going to Olness was like me earlier on going to Cranwell to accept the crewing up bit.
Anything happened on while you were there? You weren't there long.
Yeah, I got drunk for the only time in my life.
Tell us about that.
Well, as it happened, the navigation officer was a friend of my wife's. And as young kids, they'd gone about together. And so I was very, very friendly with the navigation officer. I never drank. I was a teetotaler. And he left. He got posted, and he invited me to his party. And somebody spiked my drink. They got me to have a pint of beer, and somebody spiked it, and they put whiskey in, and I didn't know, and they had to carry me home, and I had a terrible night. Oh, a most awful night. It's the only time I've ever been drunk.
And you weren't there long, were you?
No.
You It seems to have got there in August. Yes, August, and seems to have left in September.
Mm.
And then you go to LTU Mulgamore, Northern Ireland.
Where? Mulgamore, yeah.
Now, what's LTU stand for?
Loran Training Unit. Loran was an electronic form of
navigation.
L-O-R-A-N, yeah. It was an electronic form of navigation. And I went there to train navigators.
You haven't mentioned
Loran, no.
That's something you knew about.
Well, I didn't have Loran when I was up in Wick and David Stowe Moore. So we must have got it sometime when I was on Sunderland flying boats.
Now, what was the Loran system?
It was electronic. It came through beacons, and it didn't have a very big range. Whereas the Consul had a range of about over 1,000 miles. Loran only had a range of 300 or 400. So there were certain parts of the Bay of Biscay that we would get into where Loran wouldn't reach us. So we couldn't use it, but I can't really tell you. I'm not technical enough to know, but it was a couple of wavy lines, and we had to get them together and transfer that reading to a chart, a special Loran chart, and it would tell us where we were. And I went there, and my pilot was a Czechoslovakian, Sukup.
What was he like?
And he was a nice lad. We got on well together, and we were flying Wellingtons. And I wasn't there very long, I don't think.
No, it wasn't nothing too long. It was a couple of months. What was the Wellington like? You seem to go into another month here. 2 or 3 months. What was Sukup like? I mean, did you find it difficult, him being Czech, or was it?
No, he was... He'd escaped from Czechoslovakia and was one of a large number of Czechs that joined the RAF.
Was his English good?
Yeah, very good. He was an educated man. He'd been to university, and English would be his first language. It'd be his first foreign language, I should think.
Now, what about the Wellington? It's a famous old aircraft. What's it like?
Yeah, it was a good aircraft. It was better than a Whitley, but it was, at that time I'd never flown Sunderland, so it was the best aircraft I'd been in at that time.
And you had flown Sunderland then?
I hadn't then. I'd done a tour, hadn't I? Of course I had, yeah. Yeah, well, it wouldn't be as good as the Sunderland, but...
It was all right?
It was a good aircraft, yeah, it was a canny aircraft.
And... No, nothing that you
do
seem to be on training flights. Loran
Nitra,
a lot of it's at night.
Yeah.
anything do you remember, or is it just routine?
No, it was all just routine for me. That we were billeted in huts again with open fires and quite.
How did you get on with the Irish civilians, or did you not see much?
Never came across them really.
You then go to 111 operational training unit at Nassau.
At Nassau, yeah.
Is that America?
Bahamas.
Bahamas, of course.
Yeah.
How did that come about? That doesn't sound too bad, but
Well, I was going on to Liberators then. What month was that?
That's you seem to be a gap. You finish in November.
Yeah.
Flying the Wellington at the Loran training unit, and you don't start flying the Liberator until March. Your first flight's 19th of March. So what kills those months?
Well, can you have a look in the back of the book?
Now, just look up. You were at the Loran training unit for until the end of November 44, and then you go to you're really not doing anything. You just You go to Morecambe, which is a depot, Atlantic.
No, it isn't. At Morecambe, I was instructing.
We're only there 2 days.
Eh?
Only there 2 days.
Oh, was I? Oh.
And then you're on the boat, the Mauritania.
Yeah. So I was at a receiving depot, Morecambe then.
2 PDC, it says.
Hmm.
What do you remember about the trip out from the Mauritania?
Well, it was a lovely boat to be on.
In what way?
Well, I mean, for one thing, I went out as an officer, so I wasn't on J-deck. And I even had a cabin when I was on that boat, whereas, you know, previously I slept in a hammock.
Where were you going?
We're going to...
You don't go straight to Nassau, you go to New York, do you?
Yeah. Went to New York.
And that's where you... That's the harbour you went to?
Yeah. And we waited there for... we waited there to be called by the Bahamas that they were ready to train us.
And what were you doing in New York then?
Well, I stayed with an auntie and uncle. And I got a good daily allowance to look after myself, but they looked after me, so I had plenty of money to see New York, and I went to all the shows.
What was the night like there for you as an English chap in New York, an officer? What did you do
in New York? Well, it was just like the American hospitality that I'd had when I'd been in Camden, where I spent a lot of time in Times Square, and people bought me drinks and food, and we went to cinema. We used to go to the English Speaking Union and ask them what tickets they had, free tickets they had for the day. If the theatres had 100 spare tickets, they used to just send them down if the theatre had 100 spare seats, they would just allocate them to troops and whoever called and, you know, got these free tickets. And I saw all the big bands of the time, Benny Goodman and all the big bands were used to play during the interval between, you know, that have it was sort of an afternoon session, and then 1.5 hours before the evening session started, and in between the bands used to play on the stage, and we used to stay on and watch as much as we could, and it was just like a top class holiday, really, and then eventually we were told that we were going down to Miami, which was a 3-day journey on a train, and we went to Miami and stayed in Miami for 3 or 4 days until the Bahamas were ready to take us in.
So what were you doing? What was Miami? That's Florida, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we were just on the beach, really. It was a good walk that time.
What happened when you went to Nassau?
I went to Nassau, yeah, where the Prince of Wales was the governor. Prince Ed, Duke of Windsor, was the governor of the island when we were there.
Now, what unit were you joining there? At Timberwalk Prince, 111, Operational Training Unit. Now, what was that?
It was for putting crews together, and training pilots onto liberators, converting pilots onto liberators.
That meant you had to be converted first.
Well, it was no problem to me. I mean,
for that case, were you there as a? Are you being put into a crew, or are you instructing?
No, I'm there to learn. And it was bomber command that I was going on, so I was changing commands.
So, for one thing. To you is bomber command.
Yeah.
Now, why were you changing? Why were you changing to bomber command?
Well, because the war had finished and.
Well, not quite.
Not quite.
It was March 1945, 5 months ago.
Is there? Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, but the European war finished.
No. No. May the 8th.
May the 8th, 45. And what was the date I was there?
19th of March.
March, yeah. Because I celebrated the end of the war in Times Square in New York, coming back home. But we're really crewing up, and the navigator, the pilot, was converting. You know, some of them were coming off two engines to four engines, but my pilot happened to have been a Sunderland pilot, and he was.
Tell me about the crewing up process there.
Well, it's really the pilot's, the captain's responsibility to find himself a navigator, but I went out with him. We both went out together from this country, so he would find a crew, you know, wireless operators, etc. We had a second navigator.
Jim told me that he was pilot off to Tanton.
Don Tanton, yeah.
Don.
Mm.
What was he like?
He was great. I'll bring him for you now if you want. He's still alive. And he spent all his life flying for Thompson's on Boeing's. And
so he was a good pilot.
He was excellent.
And you put a crew together. I don't think we need name them all because it's not an active service crew. But you put a crew. Now, what about the Liberator?
The Liberator was a lovely, stable aircraft in the air, and I never once was airsick.
What was so good about it? Was it just bigger, or it's not bigger than a?
It wasn't bigger than a Sunderland, but it was a big aircraft, and it was a good aircraft and very, very stable. And we went out on. We're talking about the Bahamas. The Sunderland and particularly the Whitley used to yaw. If you looked down at the tail while you were flying, you could see it moving about like that. It was yawing around the centre of gravity, and the navigator was on about the centre of gravity. But with the Liberator, and if you looked out of the Astrodome window to the tail, it was straight up like that. It was straight as a die.
So you weren't seasick in it?
I wasn't sick or seasick, no. I wasn't sick.
You've done various exercises out there.
Yeah.
Anything you remember about them?
No, they were just routine, really. They were routine for me because I'd done a tour of, you know, I'd done a few hundred hours. I'd probably done 1,000 hours flying at that time.
Now, on your way home, that's where you look picked up, because you're back home in August. Number 12, it's Mount Mober anyway. Now, so what about the trip back? You come back via New York, obviously.
Yeah.
Do you remember the celebrations of a
B-day? Oh, yeah. Well, we stayed with my auntie and uncle again. And we left them when they asked us what we were going to do for the VE day. We said we had to go back to base, my pilot and I, so that we could be free. We didn't want to be with my auntie and uncle on VE night. And when we went to Times Square, and there must have been a million people milling around Times Square. It was packed to the gunnels, and people were buying us drinks. We were in uniform, and whereas the first time I was in America, I wasn't in uniform. But we're in uniform this time because they'd been involved in Pearl Harbor. And who did we meet when we were walking along along the pavement? It was my auntie and uncle. They'd come down to Times Square as well. And out of all those people there, you know, they said, "I thought you said you were going back to base." I said, "Well, we did go back, but we found out that they were letting us go out on our own." So.
And what was the atmosphere like? What were people doing? Oh, what was Times Square like?
They were dancing and cheering. There were gas bands set up all over the place, and they all had their own little dance groups, and people were drinking, and it was generally just merriment, like it would be in Trafalgar Square on New Year's Eve in this country, and all. It was tremendous, really. I remember meeting a Navy chap, and I got on very nicely with this naval fellow, and he said to me, whereabouts do you live then in England? And I said, Hartlepool. No, I'm sorry, I didn't say Hartlepool. I lived in Hartlepool, but I said Newcastle, because I thought he wouldn't know where Hartlepool was. And he said, oh, Newcastle, he said. I know that place well, he said. I was based at Hartlepool. He'd been sailing out of Hartlepool with the American Navy. And that was one little incident that happened.
How did you get home? Because you went back to England, putting back to
Melbourne,
didn't you?
Yeah.
Do you remember the trip back?
Yes, I do. We came on the Ile de France, which eventually set fire to in the New York Harbour. We came home.
What was that trip like?
Well, it was good because I was a flight lieutenant, and I'd been to a unit where there were lots of younger officers than me, because they were all crewing up to go on their first tour. I'd done a tour, and I was a flight lieutenant, and my pilot was a pilot officer, and they made me officer in charge of the service people on board. There were a lot of civilian people on board, but they weren't connected with war matters. They weren't in the services, and so we had many hundreds of people on board coming to England in connection with the war, and I was made the senior officer. So I had a special cabin that they would have given to somebody, you know, in civilian times. It was paying a lot of money for it, so I did well coming back from there.
And when you come back, you come to, I'm not quite sure what you're doing, because you go to number 12, F, flying, I'm not sure what it is, flying unit, at Melton Mowbray, briefly, and then you go off to India.
Yeah, well, we...
What do you remember happening?
Well, we went to Melton Mowbray to pick up a Liberator, and we flew it out to India.
Now, I think we forget about the Melton Mowbray, but that's a hell of a journey. What do you remember of the flight down?
Well, we night stopped the first night at Castle Bonito, which is in Ethiopia. And the second night, we night stopped in Tel Aviv. And we were going to fly from Tel Aviv to Karachi, but I got sandfly fever, and my crew had to go without me. We had two navigators, as I mentioned earlier on, and so the other navigator, he took my place, and they flew down to Karachi, and I had to go to hospital while I was in Tel Aviv because of this sandfly fever. I was there 4 or 5 days, and then I had to hang around for 3 or 4 days trying to hitch a lift down to Karachi, waiting for an aircraft to come through that was going down to Karachi, and which I did. So I went on to Karachi on my own. From there, I went to Pune.